All right, well, I guess I'll start off the same as everyone else, thanking Laurette for inviting me. And contrary to the common belief, Laurette is not my long-lost sibling. I'm going to talk to you today about some work of mine. It's actually published work, and I don't normally present work that's already in press. But Laurette's asked me to talk about this particular research as part of my research because it relates to some things that she and I actually are interested in trying to pursue that fits very tidily and neatly into the BTS agenda. In particular, my research, and I have a bunch of different papers on this topic, study people's buying behavior, and in particular, looking at people's shopping habits in the domain of consumer packaged goods. These are branded goods that you'd find in supermarkets and mass retail type outlets. I also want to mention that what I'm going to talk about today has to do with buying habits that are very short-term in nature. We're talking about during the course of a year, for example. I also have some other work which looks at people's buying habits over the course of a lifetime. And if you read this week's copy of The Economist, there's a one-page article about one of those studies I've done with some of my other co-authors. So at any rate, I should start off by saying there's a ton of literature that's looked at consumer goods of various kinds, not just packaged goods, and found there to be a lot of what I'm going to call inertia in choices. So by inertia, I literally just mean if you already bought Coke, then you're a lot more likely to buy Coke next time you go shopping than buying Pepsi. Now, the problem is when we just look at this fact, we just look at inertia and choices, there are two conceptually distinct statistical explanations for why you might exhibit inertia in your shopping behavior. The first one is what I'll term structural, and by this, I'm an economist, so it means that I'm going to take a literal underlying economic explanation for this, is that one explanation is what you bought in the past literally directly influences what you buy today. In other words, we might literally think, my preferences today are a function of what I bought in the past. The alternative explanation, though, and this is where things get a little murky, is maybe there's just stuff I don't get to observe about people that make them different and that are persistent over time. And part of us statistically getting to the bottom of whether or not the inertia in choices reflects something fundamental about people's preferences, or rather is just some spurious correlation because my data doesn't teach me everything I need to know about people, is pretty important. And the reason for that is we're not just in the business of estimating preferences, we're in the business of trying to answer questions like, are there interventions we can conduct as firms or as policy workers to change people's shopping behavior? So if in fact people's inertia is purely structural, then in fact we can use marketing to control people's choices over time. Discounts today are investments in loyal customers tomorrow, for example. On the other hand, if this inertia is just spurious, that means there really is no room for an intervention today to have any kind of material long-term implication. So this brings me to the subject of the paper, if I can get this to advance here. Seems not to be responding. You must have University of Chicago technology here. Ours fails on a regular basis.
You might have to.
Okay, so it's the Microsoft effect. Okay, very good. All right, very well. Got it. Oops, get ahead of me. All right, so just give you a quick overview of what my findings are here. This is a bad habit I get from the University of Chicago, where we have a 99% chance of not finishing our talk, so we usually give the punchline at the beginning and then let the rest of the audience finish our talk for us. Basically, what I'm going to do is take Nielsen data. We have some representatives here from Nielsen. I should add that I'm a very, very heavy consumer of Nielsen data. The data I'm going to use today is not part of the KILTS data pool that we're going to make available at the University of Chicago, but it's exactly the same type of data. We're going to use panel data on household shopping behavior in consumer packaged goods to measure inertia. What we're going to find is that the finding of inertia is very robust to all sorts of controls I'll try to throw into the analysis to allow for the fact that people are different from one another, people are heterogeneous in ways that might be unobserved to the researcher. And I'm going to come to the conclusion that we find structural state dependence, meaning there is something about the past that's important for predicting what you do today or how you shop today. And I'm going to look at three underlying explanations, time permitting. As you notice, I have many words in each of my sentences. I'm going to look at three alternative explanations for why what you did in the past might fundamentally influence how you shop today. The first is just what the marketers call loyalty. You could imagine there literally being a psychological switching cost. Psychologists have talked about the phenomenon of cognitive dissonance, that somehow once I buy something in the past, I rationalize it ex post. I feel a stronger attachment or a stronger preference for it in the future. So this would create an effect much like a switching cost, although it would be somewhat non-economic in nature. An alternative explanation is purely search. Once I buy something, I become informed about its existence. I'm aware of its prices, which could, you know, just by the mere fact that we spend very little time making any one individual decision in a supermarket, that might just be a heuristic way of shopping. I know this product. I know its price. I just hone in on it because it's too expensive time-wise for me to search around and find something else. And the third possible explanation is just there's learning. I'm still learning about things. I found something I like. So I might show some inertia on it. This might be short-term in nature, but maybe the short-term nature of my data gives me the illusion of a persistence that really isn't going to last indefinitely. And the patterns we're going to study in the data are going to be most consistent with the first explanation of psychological switching costs and not consistent with what we might expect from search or learning types of stories. Very briefly here, I've tried to eliminate all the technical stuff. There's a paper, so you can read it if you're interested in how we did all this stuff. But I need a model to do all of this, because if I want to measure inertia in a consumer purchase environment, obviously I have to control for the fact that things have different marketing stimuli. I mean, I might observe someone repeat buying Pepsi, Pepsi, Pepsi. Is that inertia? Maybe it's just that Pepsi was cheap every time this person went to the store. So I'm going to need a model or control for all the other things that might have potentially influenced your choices. So I'm going to work with a simple economic model. My model says that for a household H who's shopping in some product category, let's say soft drinks, let's say there's capital J alternatives, there's Coke, Pepsi, Sprite, and so on, lots of healthy stuff consistent with our talk today, the total value I would get in utility terms, sorry, economics, the total value I get from purchasing alternative J on some shopping trip on date T has a couple components to it. That first thing, alpha, maybe this is just some kind of intrinsic utility. I like Coke. I like the brand. There's some intrinsic value I get from it. Then there's some this other term, eta, that says I have some inherent sensitivity to the prices I have to pay. All else equal, I like to pay less if I can get away with it. And the third term is probably the most important for today, this term gamma. This is the switching cost-like thing. This is the inertia term, rather, which says I get more value from things that I purchased in the past. And you can see this little term S I've included there is just something that summarizes my past shopping behavior. For example, this term would be I'll get gamma extra U tiles from buying Coke today if Coke was the brand I purchased previously. So this would be consistent with some of the work in cognitive dissonance, for instance. And if I make some convenient assumptions about the residual epsilon, this is the stuff that as a researcher I don't get to observe in my data set, if I make convenient assumptions, I get a very convenient functional form for demand. Literally, this expression at the bottom says, the probability that I buy brand J, given the availability of all the other things, and conditional on what current prices are for the thing I choose and the things I didn't choose, and conditional on my loyalty state, meaning conditional on the thing that I'm loyal to currently, I have an expression for the probability of buying. And I'm going to take that to data to try and estimate these parameters. I add a last bullet point there to emphasize that we're very careful about controlling for the fact that the parameters could differ across different households in this population. I'm not going to get into the details of how that's done, but obviously separating the role of within-household dynamics over time from between households, you know, heterogeneity in their taste, this is a very important part of the exercise, just not something we're going to get into in a 15-minute discussion. As I already said, these are Nielsen data. Just for those of you who are interested in Nielsen data, this is the estimation or the demand estimation came from merging Nielsen's home scan panel with its RMS sample of stores so that I know not only what a household picked each time they go to a store, I know what the prices and marketing influences were for all the things they didn't pick. And that's how we're going to trace out their willingness to pay. I know what they sacrificed when they made a choice of one thing and relinquished their choice of something else. The data, I mean, nothing terribly interesting here to say except for this last bullet point, which says I can stare at the raw data and see something that looks like a lot of, like inertia without even fitting a model. In the orange juice category, for example, The average person going to the store and buying orange refrigerated juice in this data has a 43% chance of choosing Minute Maid versus the other brands, the main one being Tropicana. However, if a person had previously purchased Minute Maid, the probability of them buying Minute Maid today suddenly jumps up to 74%. Is that inertia? Could just be that this household really likes Minute Maid, and that's precisely what I meant earlier when I said we need to be careful that what we're seeing is something that's fundamentally changing over time versus I'm just capturing the fact that some households love Minute Maid. So if I observe you repeat buying something, this might just be selection biased. I've just selected you on being a lover of Minute Maid. I have to figure out how to untangle that effect. That's what my model's going to do. So this is an ugly slide. I realize now that probably this was not the right choice. I should have just put in the headlines here. I'm going to fit a whole bunch of different models that throw in a whole bunch of bells and whistles. I'll just go to the punchline here. What I'm going to find is that controlling for differences across people's preferences is very important. It improves model fit. Turns out being very flexible in how we control for differences across household is also extremely important. That also improves fit. That's something that actually is something that's been handled a little bit sloppily in the literature. But most importantly, state dependence seems to matter. It seems that even after throwing in all these controls, what you did in the past seems to be very predictive of what you buy today, i.e., people form shopping habits. So you may love Coca-Cola. You may love Coca-Cola more than everyone else. But there's a discount one period, you switch over to Pepsi, the following shopping trip, Pepsi's back to its regular price, and yet you repeat buy Pepsi, even though most of the time you like Coke. So these are what I mean by the habits we see. And I can see this in lots of categories, even though for this analysis I only studied two. I'll skip these little pictures here. We did a bunch of things to convince ourselves we hadn't just fit a model and lo and behold, numbers popped out that looked convenient for us. So one of the things we wanted to do is just to be absolutely sure that the sequence in which you buy things really matters. What we did is we reestimated the model and we just reshuffled everyone's purchase histories. In other words, we use all your data, but we randomized what order they were in. If this was just spurious correlation, we would still find state dependence. If, in fact, the past really matters, well, once we randomize what the past was, then we shouldn't find any evidence. And sure enough, we find that purchase order matters, right? The state dependence goes away if we randomize the order of the trips over time. We randomize the calendar dates. Second question. Well, maybe there's something else going on. Maybe there's just autocorrelation. Maybe there's something about people's preferences that we don't observe, and it's just persistent over time. Maybe I like variety, so sometimes I buy Pepsi, and my need for variety doesn't go away immediately. Maybe it lasts a few weeks. So we spend a lot of time thinking, well, how would I deal with that kind of persistence? And our answer was, well, one way we could do this is to look at things like discounts. If it's just autocorrelation or persistent errors, then if a discount made you switch to Pepsi last week, then today, if prices are back to their regular level, you should shift back to Coke. Because if ultimately you had a strong taste for Coke and you only switched to Pepsi because of a discount, if it's persistence and unobservables, you'd switch back to Coke. But on the other hand, if it's my baseline case that this is something fundamental about habits, then even though you switched to Pepsi because of a discount last week, under my habit story, you should repeat buy Pepsi today even when prices readjust. And when we go to the data, what we find is that indeed, switching because of a discount does not seem to impact the magnitude of these habits. In other words, something more fundamental is going on than just the stuff I don't observe persists over time. Okay, so we've concluded so far that there's more going on than just some sort of spurious correlation in the data. Something about the past teaches us about how people shop today. What we'd like to do now is try and say, well, what are sort of specific economic processes that could potentially be explaining this? So we're going to look at three. We're going to look at my baseline case, this loyalty story. Literally, I exhibit a switching cost. The second one is search. Maybe it's not that I have a switching cost, it's just that it's costly for me to find better deals in the store. And the third one is learning. I'm still in the process of figuring out what I like. I liked what I buy last time, so why would I take the risk of trying something new, which I might not like, when I know for certain I like the thing I bought last time? Well, that's a tough challenge there, and what we wanted to do was think about how could we utilize the Nielsen data to try and disentangle these stories. Oops. All right. So I'm going to start with the search story. How we're going to start with the search story is to exploit the fact that firms use marketing periodically to help their customers find their products and find their prices. Whoops. In particular, they run in-aisle displays. So once in a while, branded goods will run a display in the aisle, so there's a big sign with lots of extra volume of the product saying bonus deal or bonus buy, discount or something to that effect. These are cues to the fact that there's a good price. In short, if you walk into the shopping aisle, even if you go straight to your preferred item, it's going to be hard to miss the fact that there's some other item that's being displayed prominently with its price in big letter and big numbers. So our theory would be if all that's going on in the data is people are facing search costs, then presumably if there's another product that they did not previously buy but that's displayed prominently, that should offset this habit. In other words, if Pepsi is on display today, then I shouldn't exhibit as much state dependence, I shouldn't exhibit as much loyalty to Coke, even though I bought it last time. Because on this particular trip, I'm going to be informed about both products. So we do this. What we're going to do is fit a model where we... skipped ahead a little too far here. Sorry. What we're going to do is fit a model where we actually condition on the display activity of competing brands. And what we find is that even though a competing product is on display, that has a main effect. Obviously, if you display a product, it's going to make, on average, make people more aware of it, more likely to buy it. But it doesn't offset the inertia. It doesn't offset the explanatory power of the fact that buying Coke yesterday increases the likelihood of repeat buying Coke today. Even in the presence of a Pepsi display, the magnitude of that habit is not affected. Second alternative explanation is learning. The way learning would work is that literally we imagine, and when I say learning, I should be very cautious here because I have a much broader audience here than the rational decision makers of the economic world. I'm thinking in the spirit of rational Bayesian learning, meaning that I utilize my information correctly and that my uncertainty about products is gradually shrinking as I become more and more informed. So I'm not talking about heuristic forms of learning and so forth. Under rational Bayesian learning, what we would expect is in the short term, as I become informed about a product, I might show some inertia on it because I know that I like it, or on the opposite, I know I dislike it, so I stay away from it. But over time, we should expect that inertia to dissipate. In other words, over time, as I become more and more informed about the products in the category, I should stop exhibiting inertia. So our basic way of testing for learning in these kinds of data is just to look and see if these habits get smaller and smaller as time progresses in the sample. So we actually looked at that, and what we find is there's no evidence of a dampening on the magnitude of these habits. And remember, I'm using data that span 3 years, which means within a household, the magnitude of this habit seems to be fairly stable over a three-year horizon. We don't see it getting smaller and smaller as you accumulate more and more experiences with the brands in the category. So just to give you an idea then of how big these habits are, I've tried to calculate. I'm taking my model to infer their magnitudes and assign them a dollar value. I'm trying to think by dollar value, I mean, what's the equivalent price reduction that you would have in order to be compensated for these things? Well, in the first column, I show the dollar value. Some of you may be looking at these and saying, well, these are like 10 cents. Who cares? But remember, I'm talking about products that are only like a dollar or so. So on average, if I take the median household in my sample and take the median household switching cost, in a category like tub margarine, that's already 12% of the shelf price. And for the 75th percentile household, we're at 40% of the shelf price. What that means is on average, I would have to cut the price 40% off of its regular level to compensate the 75th percentile household for their habit. So if you previously bought Blue Bonnet, right, you're going to have to get at least a 41% price cut on Parquet to be induced to switch on average. And similarly, in orange juice, the median household has a 20% ratio, meaning their switching cost is almost 20% of the shelf price. And if you look at the 75th percentile household, again, you're up at 40%. So these switching costs are actually pretty big when you compare them to the price levels that people actually pay for these products. Very final point about this, I'm not going to get into the mechanics of all this, but in a follow-up study with my co-authors, we actually went to the supply side and tried to think, well, this has a lot of implications for marketing. In particular, we started calculating what would happen if we took these demand estimates and calculated how firms would set their prices in equilibrium if they're all competing with one another, and understanding that what they do with their prices today has implications for the future. In short, we solve a dynamic game and calculate the equilibrium in this dynamic game. That paper has a lot of details in the appendix, because that's actually a pretty non-trivial task just to solve that. But what was really interesting, we found some very interesting implications for pricing. For this audience, I think the pricing implications are a little less relevant. But suppose, and this is sort of pointing towards the work that Laurette and I have in mind of studying, suppose you're a firm coming in with healthier alternatives, and your goal is to try and switch people away from the current products they buy towards products that might be better for them. What we learn from this is the bad news. We might have to compensate people for these switching costs. It's not just that we have to inform them and that we have to get our products available, and that's, by the way, a huge problem. We have to get shelf space, but we're going to have to compensate people for their habits to induce them to switch. That's kind of the bad news. The good news is there's a long-term benefit to this. That is, in these investments in acquiring people and switching to our healthier alternatives today may have long-term implications if people form the same kinds of habits on the healthy alternatives as they did on these potentially less healthy alternatives. Another question Laurette and I are very interested in asking before we even get to that is whether or not the magnitude of these habits vary with, quote-unquote, the healthiness of products. Are less healthy product categories the ones that exhibit the strongest forms of habits? Products with things like high fat content and so forth, are these the places where people form the strongest habits? So just to summarize then, what I've tried to convince you here is that we find that inertia in people's choices survives a battery of models and a battery of controls for confounding factors that might have given us the illusion of there being inertia. That the evidence in the data suggests that this isn't just spurious correlation. There really is something material about how you shopped in the past and how it influences what you buy today. The paper I mentioned that's in The Economist actually goes and looks over people's entire lifetime and shows that experiences you had, even as early as in your childhood, can still, 50 years later, have impacts on how you shop compared to people who didn't have those experiences. Finally, we looked at different economic explanations. We tried to rule out what we thought were the obvious potential alternative explanations, things like learning and search costs. We had mostly these were tricks we tried to do to exploit the data to try and rule out those explanations. And our data seemed to suggest that what's going on is something that's closest in spirit to a psychological switching cost model. So we have some justification in treating the state dependence as being quote-unquote structural. And as I sort of commented a moment ago, this distinction was critical when we start asking questions like, do interventions have material implications for how people shop? All right, thank you very much.